I'm literally right now searching. You can't buy like customizable World Baseball Classic jerseys because I wanted to get a Xander Netherlands one.
Do they
There's
not
one.
sell
They
WBC jerseys?
sell like regular shirts. Like I could get a shirt that looked like the Netherlands one, but not Bogart's name on it. What the fuck is the point of that?
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, what the
Yeah.
fuck? They have them for like other fucking people. They have like a Correa one for Puerto Rico. The fuck is my Xander one? This is brutal, dude. To episode 84 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focused solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, good to have you back. We missed you. We missed you 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was going to apologize, first and foremost, for coming back. At all.
Yeah.
I apologize to our listenership, but
yeah.
It had to be done.
It's true.
Brett, on a scale from one to an Ian Kinsler take, how hot do you feel tonight?
That is maybe an Ian Kinsler Monday take, not an Ian Kinsler Wednesday take.
All right, it's fair enough. Craig, on a scale from one to Puerto Rico's infield talent, how much talent are you bringing to this podcast?
Oh, wow. I'm gonna say I'm bringing in talent on the scale of the only first baseman Jim Leland will actually start.
That's very fair. I think that's an honest
assessment. Yeah, I'm not quite at Puerto Rico's infield. I'm not even at the first baseman he won't start. But I feel like
it's an honest assessment.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's been forever since we've done a reader email show, so that's how we are. That's how we're going to start out this episode, just like old times for those of you who have been with us for a few years now. So we'll do that quickly, take a brief break, and then go over Brett's top 175 Dynasty League starters. So if you've been pining away for me to butcher my way through a variety of emails, tonight is your lucky night. So, Brett, I'm going to kick the first email out to you, and the first email is from Greg. Greg says, I'm in a 14-team head-to-head points league keeper, and I'm wondering what the most you would give up for Alex Reyes is. I figure now might be the best time to get him. Is trading someone who might break out like Robbie Ray a good idea, or would you aim for someone like Skaggs or old man John Lackey? I plan on contending this year, but the idea of having Reyes for years to come is pretty enticing. Much appreciated. So those are that's a pretty wide range of names that that Greg gave us, Brett. So I don't know if you want to sort of talk about them individually or just about the broader concept of trading for Reyes right now.
Sure. We'll get into the starting pitcher list later, but I have Reyes ranked over all three of these guys, and does I honestly for different reasons. Tommy John surgery is not nearly the cinch to come back from that some people still think it is, or some people did think it was when that was the prevailing train of thought. But Reyes has so much talent that you kind of have to view him as. With the same upside, but just with a longer ETA and slightly higher risk. So, as opposed to before the injury, when he was going to be starting the season in the rotation and had the same upside, now you're looking at probably a mid 2018 arrival, and probably the risk of someone who hasn't really of a prospect who hasn't really pitched in the upper minors, has good stuff, has shown the ability to hold that stuff, but could could struggle as he makes his way up. In terms of Robbie Ray, I'm not one of the Robbie Ray apologists. His strikeout rate is great, but I don't think he will actually turn into anything resembling an ace. I think he gives up too much hard contact, too many home runs, and I don't see that necessarily changing. I like Tyler Skaggs probably best out of this group of three, just because I think he has the best combination of current skill and potential for longevity, even if he certainly doesn't project as someone who's in an SP1 or an SP2. And then Lackey, I think, is a really strong bet for 2017 with that defense behind him. But, I mean, he's 30. I think he's going to turn 39 during the season. He's old as shit. He's not going to be around for very much longer. Not like on the earth, but he's,
well, all that fried chicken and beer, we don't really, he could go anytime. Yeah,
I was gonna say, good distinction, Brett.
Yes. So I think with Lackey, it's not particularly close. I think if you wanted to trade Reyes for someone who you were going to get more production out of this year, I think you could shoot higher than him. I think you'd want to shoot. Honestly, I'd want to shoot for someone like Rich Hill, maybe someone who had more 2017 impact. But yeah, I don't think any of these guys are that far behind Reyes. Ben, what do you think? Did I say anything that offended you?
No, I want to talk a little bit about the overall idea of trading for Reyes right now. If you are a contender, I think you have to have a really, really strong staff to be willing to do that. I am increasingly of the mind that you need to go all in when you can in dynasty leagues. So unless you are very, very confident in your pitching staff, I don't think I'd be looking to give up a pitcher for Reyes right now. I mean, I also don't love Ray, and Lackey is so old that, like, I get it, and it might be good in theory, but it makes me very nervous.
I think it depends a bit on the depth of the league. I think in a 14 team league, I'm trading Lackey. I like Lackey. He said he's probably going to pitch next year too, which gives you a little bit of extra value on him this, you know, in the short term, obviously. But if we're talking a 20 teamer, I'm with you, Ben. If we're talking 14, I agree with what you both said. I'm trading Ray, I'm trading Skaggs. But these guys are not difference makers in a 14 team league. I don't think. And I think you can find, I mean, what odds would you put on, okay, the guy's pitching right now in the World Baseball Classic, Seth Lugo. What odds would you put on? Probably less, fewer innings, but would you put on him in terms of a rate basis producing along with a guy like Skaggs? I don't think it's necessarily like one-to-one, but I don't think it's impossible. And there are plenty of guys who pop up who could give you that kind of value in a short term. And the replacement level, again, in a 14-team league, is not, it's not like a 10-team league, obviously. It's not so high. But I still think the difference in terms of adding someone with Reyes's talent level to your team in the long term is too big to pass up, personally. And I want to reiterate what Brett said, that coming back from Tommy John is not as sure a thing as people seem to think. And beyond that, coming back, like the rate stats, 85% or whatever it is, come back. But that doesn't mean they come back as good as they were before, which is crucial. And so it's worth keeping that in mind. But I think that's a risk I'd take in shallower leagues that I wouldn't in deeper leagues.
Yeah, I think your point about league size is right. I tend to always default to TDGX now.
Yeah, no, and me too, which is why I went back to the email to check, because I was curious. And I think, you know, the difference might even be like 16 team. This becomes a lot harder for me in terms of a guy like Lackey, who is good right now. But 14, I think I go for it. I think it's just on that side of the risk reward scale that I would push it.
Fair enough. So, Craig, we'll stay with you for our next question, which does deal with a 16-team Dynasty Points League. And this question is from Sean. And Sean says, we've been in talks of a Cody Allen for Matt Theis and Ramon Laureano deal. We do not need a closer, which leads the question, would you ever sell solid but non-elite prospects for a notable closer that you do not need? So, a strange question, not a weird fucking format, but a weird fucking question. And I will let you handle that however you want to.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would do this deal yesterday. I mean, as to the broader question, it depends on the closer and depends on the prospects. I think there are solid, but non-elite has a range, and at the upper end, it's different than the bottom end. And same goes for notable closers. I mean, Cody Allen is not only a notable closer, he's a really valuable closer in fantasy baseball because of all the strikeouts he gets. I would do this deal yesterday. I know Brett loves Theis. I know Wilson Caraman loves Ramon Laureano. Neither of those guys are, Laureano is not an impact enough level talent for me to care about it at this point. I think he's a great guy to throw into deals to get it done. And I'm not nearly as high on Theis as Brett is. And again, we go back to league size and we are talking 16 team right now, but Theis as a first baseman is, I just don't see the impact value with him in a league at 16 teams. If you wanted to make that case at 20 or deeper, I might be able to listen, but I don't see it here. And Cody Allen is good right now. And I guarantee you that within 3 months, you could trade him for better prospects when someone needs a closer. So I would do this deal yesterday. Brett?
Yeah, the only thing more, not the only thing, but one of the few things more intense than my Matt Theis appreciation is my Cody Allen appreciation.
Yeah, I was going to say this is I still thought this would be easy for you.
It is. I would absolutely make this trade for Cody Allen, and I think it's probably closer than Craig is. And the one thing I want to point out is that for those of you that do play in points leagues, Theis is going to be a much better points league guy than a regular roto guy because his plate discipline stats, even if his regular fantasy numbers are not super high end, which I don't think they will be. He is the kind of hitter who could walk more than he strikes out and in the majors. So I think his value definitely ticks up in that format. But that said, I mean, Cody Allen is easily a top five closer for me, and I like him a lot. So yeah, I would, and closers tend to be the kind of assets that you can add one even if you don't need it, and it can still make a difference. It's depending on your format, but it's there is room to benefit there.
Yeah, that's a good caveat with the points league. But going back to what you were just saying about closers, I mean, you go from having too many to not enough very quickly. A lot of times. So it's not something that I would necessarily advocate just stockpiling, but when you can do it at this price, do it.
Agreed. Not a very tough decision for me either. So Brett, this one is longer. Are you ready? Are you prepared?
I was born ready.
Okay. This question is from Lucas, and Lucas says, he is playing in a 14-team keeper league with a bunch of his friends, and a few of them have gotten really into fantasy and are starting to feel like the league is too shallow. They only keep seven, and they have 25-man rosters. There are about eight of them who would like to start a real dynasty league where they would have to pay attention to a deeper level of prospects well beyond the top 100 lists. His question is, how does he best go about getting the feel of a deep dynasty league with only eight teams and keeping it to a mixed league? Yeah, it's not good. Yeah. He wants any other tips. Well, actually, Brett, we'll just start there. He wants more tips later, but he's getting greedy. We'll just start with that general question.
Okay. I mean, the easy answer is if you have a small group that you're having trouble expanding and you want to make a league deeper, you make the rosters bigger, both active roster, reserve roster, and farm team. I mean, if you have a 16 team league where you start 23 players and you have, you know, say a 7-man reserve and 10-man bench, so it's like a TGX style roster breakout, but with 16 teams instead. I mean, you don't want to necessarily expand it out to 80-man rosters, just because that's a little much. But there's no reason why you can't, you know, start say an extra 9 to 10 players combined between offense and pitching. And then have a farm team. I mean, the easiest way to get more prospects involved is just to make a bigger farm team. I mean, you could have 25-man farm team for an 8-team league, and you'd be rostering 200 prospects, and that I think gets you kind of closer to where you want to be. But yeah, I would try to find more people. You know, ask your friends to ask their friends, and ask people at your job, people who you know like baseball, try to expand that a little bit. But that, if barring that and without making it a non-mixed league, you know, deepening the rosters is really the only thing you can really do to help move that along. Craig?
Yeah, that's all well and good, but like, you're not going to get the feel of a deep dynasty league with 8 teams in a mixed league. No, like, it's not going to happen. Like, you're in a 14 team league, and you're like, you need to expand rosters too much to even get it to the 14 team league depth with 8 teams, in my opinion. So I think what Brett said about expanding the league, like, you just gotta, I mean, look, if you want to set up a league and then tweet it to me and ask for people who want to join it, like, I'll retweet it, and you'll find people, right? I mean, like, you can just go on the internet and find people who want to do leagues like this, which I think is, I understand that you still want it to be like your friends and stuff like that. But, you know, I've been in leagues that I joined on a whim that were online that were not my friends, and I've been in them, you know, 5-7 years, and you become friends with some of the people in it and stuff like that. I just think if you want to do a league like this, you have to expand the number of teams, because it's going to be the rosters are going to be way too unwieldy with only 8 teams to get the kind of depth that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's not much in the way of message boards anymore these days, but go to Facebook. We have a page on Facebook. Yep. The Dynasty Guru has a page on Facebook. They have a group that actually has a lot of active conversations with people who read the site. So, you know, either one of those places, you know, or tweet at us, and we'll retweet you. You know,
I will not retweet you specifically.
Ben will not retweet you. Craig and I will retweet you, but we have more followers than him, so anyway. It's fine. So, yeah. So just get it out there. I mean, however,
there's no shortage of people for, like, Brett and a bunch of other crazy idiots just did some weird TDG 99 league that I don't even understand. There's no shortage of people to join your weird baseball league. Trust me.
By the way, in that league, I just took Chris Medlin in the 81st round.
That's deeply upsetting to me.
It is deeply upsetting. I would tell you who's at the top of my queue, but it's actually someone who I just noticed was available and would have taken like 15 rounds ago. I hope nobody takes him before.
Is Baber in this league? Is Tyler in this league?
I hope you snipe. Yes, Tyler is in this league.
Tyler, if you're listening, I hope you snipe Brett.
He doesn't pick before me, I don't think.
Damn it. Well,
I don't think so. Yeah. Someone will likely snipe him, and I will figure that out before the end of the show, quite possibly. But yes, there is. We are a very sick and twisted community, but there are a lot of us. So, find us.
Yeah. If I can quote Arrested Development, there are literally dozens of us. So.
what a sell job, guys. If I was on the fence about joining a dynasty league and heard that, I'd be running to join.
You're one of us, so.
Shut up. You're one of us. Damn it. okay, so this last question is somehow even stranger than that one. And it is from Random Listener. Great name. Random Listener asks, actually, it's not really asking yet. Enya and Yanni compete against each other in a couple of dynasty leagues where each owner can stash up to 10 minor leaguers. One is a 14-team league and the other is a 24-team league. Yanni emptied most of his system in both leagues as part of an unsuccessful championship run, but has two elite prospects left. Okay, so Yanni is Dave Dombrowski. Enya's farm systems are full of BP Dynasty 101 guys, but no top 25 guys. Enya wants to trade a bunch of her prospects for one or both of Yanni's elite prospects, and Yanni is open to this because Byron Buxton / Jurison Profar. They are trying to come up with a formula for a fair trade. Enya's theorem. The BP 101 should be divided into tiers, and the size of the tiers should be equal to half of the total number of teams in the league in half. So 7-player tiers for the 14-team league, 12-player tiers for the 24-team league, etc. Make the players in the bottom tier of the BP 101 worth 1 point and add 1 point for each tier increase. Based on this formula, she proposes these trades. In the 14-team league, Enya offers Ronaldo Lopez and Ian Happ for Ahmed Rosario. In the 24-team league, Enya offers Ronaldo Lopez and Tom Murphy for Ahmed Rosario. Would you accept Enya's theorem as law, modify it, or just declare it a fool's errand?
Who are we starting with?
This is you.
This is me. I would declare it a fool's errand. This is a stupid... First of all, the Dynasty 101 is separated into tiers. Is it not?
It is.
So, like, what is that? You don't do it on the number of teams in the league. You do it by the level of players that are there and in the same grouping, right? Like, am I crazy? I feel like I'm in a weird... I mean, first of all, we are in a real weird world where Enya and Yanni are competing against each other. But this makes no sense to me. And doing a weird point valuation thing is very arbitrary. Doing it on the number of teams in the league is, I guess, not arbitrary, but it ends up that way based on the player talent levels, because the odds are you're going to end up having the actual tiers that the Dynasty 101 is in get cut into pieces by these random tiers. And I think both of these offers suck. if I had Ahmed Rosario, this would not even be close.
So Craig, do you like the email overall?
I appreciate the setup. I liked that. But
yeah, I do think we need to keep Enya's theorem, not this. But yeah, we need to find Enya's theorem.
And I would say that, like, I appreciate the thought that went into it, like that they were like, let me figure out like a fair way to find common ground here, and like we can, like, you know, I think having a list of people that you say like, okay, I'm comfortable moving this list of people, and I'll give you like one of these three guys and one of these four guys in these different, like, I tier them differently. Like, I think that's a great way to approach a trade in general. But I don't think you do it based on necessarily an arbitrary list like ours, because you guys could view the people in those lists rather differently. You know what I mean? Like the owner of each of those prospects is going to view them perhaps differently than we do. I like the thought put into it, but neither of these offers are particularly close for me. I'm guessing Brett might feel a little bit differently because he loves Ian Happ, but like I just don't see it. Brett?
I don't. I wouldn't make this trade. I mean, you're dealing with it's not so cut and dry when you talk about very high end prospects like this. But you know, I think that there is a way to think about this buried under sort of the the regimentedness of the way it's broken out.
Well,
but like Craig said, I mean, you need to view all of these guys specifically or individually. And you also have to consider the transactional cost because, you know, as with any other league, I mean, if you own a player in a dynasty league, you probably value him higher than most of the other people in your league. And if you don't own a player in your league, you probably value him a little bit lower. Or, you know, so there's that which always needs to be taken into account. But I think the most important thing that I got out of this email is Enya is absolutely sitting at home being like, why the fuck am I being put in the same class as Yanni?
Yeah, messed up.
Yeah, there are way better one name artists to be able to compare Enya to than fucking Yanni.
Well, I think that's reflected in the quality of the trade, right? Like Enya is trying to fleece Yanni in these trades and probably thinks she can pull it off.
That's true. I mean, she probably does, but
I would also point out that like you can do the tier thing and assign points, but you also have to understand that like I don't think you can just add a point for each tier because the players at the top tier, especially in a league as deep as the 2014 league, are worth way more. Even like they're not worth 1 point more than the players in the second tier. They're worth more than that. Like this is like weighted average, right? I mean, this is you have to weight them.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, if you want to do it this way, you have to pretty much double it every time you go up, right? Because if you would expect to trade 2 second tier prospects for a first tier prospect. And the way that this system works, that wouldn't happen. If there are 8 tiers, then you'd have, you know, your tier 2 would be 7 points and your tier 1 would be 8 points. And that's just completely unrealistic. But if if you went 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64,
right,
then you're probably getting closer. But
then you're going to realize that Reynaldo Lopez and Tom Murphy aren't close.
Yes,
which is reflective of reality. I mean, I think this comes down to advice that you hear people give to just fans that come up with trades. If you're happy to do it, the odds are they won't be. So my guess is that Enya in this situation would be thrilled to trade Reynaldo Lopez and Tom Murphy for Ahmed Rosario in a 2014 league. So put yourself in Yanni's shoes. Well, don't actually do that, but you know. In this sense, if you had Rosario, would you ever trade them for Lopez and Murphy? No, you wouldn't. So don't offer it. That's not going to work.
Yeah. Do you think Enya has a poster of Ahmed Rosario somewhere in her castle?
God, I hope so.
Welcome back to episode 84 of Tino. I hope you used that break to look up exactly what Yanni has done in his career, because Lord knows I had to. So mercifully, we have reached the end of discussing our positional lists on Tino, because we are going to end this the long winter of our discontent by letting Brett walk us through his top 175 Dynasty League starters list. So at this point, I don't think the series really requires any more of an introduction. So Brett, the metaphorical keys are being passed your way.
Cool. Thank you, Ben. So I figure we'll spend 5 minutes on each of these guys. So we'll finish in the next 10 hours. Seem about right.
Please. No.
Yeah, perfect. Just in time for Ben to get to work.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I won't bother spending any time on the top name on this list. If you were making this list on your own, would there be any hesitation to put in Clayton Kershaw first, Craig?
What?
I said if you were making this list, would there be any hesitation
No.
It came to putting Kershaw first?
No, I mean, he's hands down the best pitcher in baseball. And I, you know, you can start making your arguments on, like, you know, semantics, like most talented or who you'd want in a single game or however you want to put it. But, and I get that he's getting a little older and you get more years with someone like Syndergaard or something like that. But pitching is short term enough that it's not even a question.
Yeah. Ben, same answer?
Same response.
Cool. So let's go into the where there might actually be some discussion. You know, we've seen now what Noah Syndergaard can do, and you know, some would argue that there is even more upside on top of what he's already done. Is Syndergaard versus Bumgarner close to you, Ben, long term or no?
Yeah, I think it's close, but I don't really have. I would also put Syndergaard here. I feel like I'm going to be bad at this portion of the list because I pretty much agree with your first six names, no questions asked. So I don't think you're.
I was going to say also, like, those are the six names. Like, I agree with where Syndergaard is too, but like, it's close enough. Like, if you want to say, like, I believe in Chris Sale, like, fine. All right.
Yeah. You know? And like, I was going to say, oh, Syndergaard is quite a few years younger than Bumgarner. But like, it doesn't really matter with guys like this. Like, Bumgarner is still not even 28. So it's really a pick-em. Yeah, it is absurd. But it's really a pick-em, and I happen to agree with the way in which you have picked him.
Okay. So let's jump past the top six then. So it's the top six for reference is Kershaw, Syndergaard, Bumgarner, Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber. The next four players on this list, Ben, of Jake Arrieta, Yu Darvish, Johnny Cueto, and Jacob DeGrom, which of these pitchers makes you the most nervous if you have them as your ace?
Oh, God. All of them? I still get concerned about Arrieta. I know he was, like, arguably the best pitcher on the planet for a season and a half, but that's just still not, like, that big of a sample compared to the rest of his career. He's already 31. He was very good last year, but, like, you know, not in this tier. So part of me wants to say Arrieta. I am also not super confident in Darvish's ability to stay on the mound. So a slight cop-out, but it's sort of between those two for me.
Okay. Craig, same question, but with the next group. And I'm going to remove David Price from this because this list came out before that news. And we can talk about him separately. But of John Lester, Steven Strasburg, Julio Urias, and Carlos Carrasco, which of that group makes you the most nervous if you're relying on them to head your rotation in a Dynasty League?
Well, two things. I would say that I just want to say I'm proud of you for giving Johnny Cueto the recognition he deserves.
Yeah.
Johnny Cueto's really good and mm-hmm. in general has been healthy like the last several. I know he had a lot of health issues for a while, but like he's really, really good. And I feel like criminally underrated. I know people know he's good, but I don't think people realize how good he is for the most part. So props for that. Secondly, I think the list, like you mentioned Price and you stretch it down to Carrasco. I don't think I can separate if we're going from Price or really not Price because he's hurt, but from Strasburg down, like I think that list stretches to 18, which adds Gerrit Cole, Carlos Martinez, and Chris Archer. Like I think that's where that group kind of ends for me. I just think the difference between Carrasco and Cole is so slim that I just don't see one. And if you prefer Cole, like I would completely buy into that. In terms of leading my rotation, I mean, you know, Urias is not going to throw a full season this year. And he's also probably not going to throw extremely deep into games because of his innings limit, which imperils his wins, which, you know, are random enough. But we certainly know the deeper you pitch into baseball games, the more likely you are to get a decision and thus a win. So I'd feel pretty nervous about him in 2017 and 2018. And I know people might think I'm just like trying not to be a Dodgers fan or whatever. I traded Urias away in my NL only league in the middle of the year last year, chasing a championship, for exactly that reason, that I was nervous that he just wasn't going to get enough innings over the next, you know, year to 2 years. And that's if everything goes perfectly, right? I mean, they're talking about 150 to 160 innings this year, which means he's probably up to like 190 next year, but that could potentially include the playoffs, which means he's not getting 32 starts in, or if he is, they're really limited. And, you know, so you're not looking at a full season potentially until 2020 or so. And that's, sorry, 2019. So that's a problem, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem in the short term, but I mean, to that end, he'll be 22 on opening day in 2019.
Sure, and that's great, but that assumes,
still seems insane. But you're absolutely
okay. Well, let's say he gets hurt 1 year, right? Like, so when does he? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of risk just in the unknown there, and I don't think he has durability issues. I think they're just going to be very careful with him. And do I think he's still like a monster long-term asset in fantasy? Absolutely. But you know, I think if we're not going to go the Urias route because of that, I mean, all of these guys kind of have injury issues in terms of Strasburg, Carrasco, and Cole. I think, how old is Carrasco at this point?
He's 29.
He's old, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not super old, but given that he just cannot seem to pitch a full season, he had 183 innings in 2015, and that's a career high. You know, the rate stats are amazing.
He just turned 30 yesterday.
Oh, there you go. So he's 30 already. The health issues are real. He's phenomenal when he's healthy. I think Steven Strasburg is better when he's healthy, so I prefer Strasburg for that reason. And Cole is significantly younger and throws more innings. I don't think he compares on a rate basis, but I would feel a little more comfortable. And frankly, you know, as I said, I'd extend it down to Archer. I might take Martinez and Archer. I might feel the most comfortable with those two. The performance isn't as kind of meteoric as the guys listed above them, but they've been pretty healthy for the most part, and I think they have that capability at least, or to be in the ballpark. So I think of the guys I feel most comfortable with, while acknowledging they're not necessarily the best assets, might be Martinez and Archer.
Okay, so now we'll do sort of a version of the opposite question here. So, and we'll leave it pretty open ended. So, for any pitcher that's not one of the six aces that we sort of established at the beginning of this conversation, all the way down through the end of the top 25. Ben, who's one guy who you look at on this list and think that you'd be really comfortable investing in, thinking that he's going to really expand on his value over the next year or two?
I mean, I'm still perfectly comfortable betting on Strasburg and Cole. Obviously, there are injury issues there that give me pause, but I mean, Strasburg is just still so dominant when he's on the mound that, you know, even if you only factor him in for 140, 150 innings a season, if you know to mitigate that in the draft, I'm sort of fine with that. I still end up with Strasburg on a lot of teams. And Cole, you know, the performance hasn't been quite as dominant, but the injury history isn't as damning either. So those are two guys who I still like a lot, who I tend to, they tend to anchor a lot of my staffs because I don't usually pay the super premium you have to pay to get one of those top six guys.
Okay. Craig, anyone you want to discuss in the top 25 who you are higher on than where they might show up here, other than Martinez and Archer, as you talked about before?
Yeah, and to be clear, like, I don't I don't think they're inappropriately slotted. I just think that in terms of my personal like comfortability, in terms of who's leading my staff, I think those guys have a combination of like youth upside and past ability to stay healthy that kind of I might just feel more personally comfortable. I think, you know, Martinez is a guy, I think you use the phrase expand on his value. I think he's somewhat even just been like his past couple seasons have been good, but not great. But I think he absolutely has the potential to be great. And I think he's someone who could, his stuff is so good that I think he could put together a really dominant campaign one of these years. I think the two guys that stand out to me kind of on the other end, you know, Matt Harvey and Brett, I would love your thoughts on this because you probably are a little more plugged in. I know he had a better start, but the Mets have also kind of been hiding him on road games where they're not on TV. Two starts ago in spring training, he just was like, I might have to get used to pitching at this level, like with this level of stuff, which was like, kind of like topping out around 93, right? Or something like that, which is kind of a scary thing to hear him say. I think he was throwing harder than that in this most recent start, but that's someone I'm keeping an eye on, certainly, and where his spring training performance, or not his stats, but kind of what he looks like in spring training really matters to me at this point. And the guy right behind him, Cole Hamels, you know, I've been an unabashed Cole Hamels fan for a really long time, but at this point, I'm really starting to get, it seems like he gives up runs in the first or second inning almost every start out and then kind of rights the ship. But at some point, you kind of got to be worried about, you know, when he's going to stop riding the ship or returning back to that. I mean, I would probably take Greinke ahead of him. I don't know. I mean, I know he had a really good ERA last year. I think the peripheral stats are not as kind in that regard. And he's just someone I'm a little more worried about.
That's fair. Harvey's an interesting guy to talk about just because there's a lot of unknown here. We haven't seen a pitcher sort of with his kind of upside in his prime try to return from thoracic outlet syndrome, or it is syndrome, yep. Right? Thoracic yep. outlet. So, yeah. Ever. And it's going to be kind of a learning experience for all of us. You know, obviously without the injury, he's noticeably higher, and that's, you know, that's sort of a stupid comment to make because that's exceedingly obvious. But I do believe that Harvey can have a successful season this year. Even if that's just as an SP3, SP4, as he sort of builds back up from the surgery. But I still think that he has more upside left. And I think the increase in velocity in spring training is useful to see. He's building up arm strength. He did hit 95 or maybe 96 in his second start. I think it was just 95, but as long as it's trending in the right direction, the velocity is not really that concerning to me. It's really going to be the first kind of 2 months of the season that shapes sort of what we think medium term Matt Harvey is going to look like. Because there's definitely a non-zero chance that he is just a disaster like he was the beginning of last year. And he's just going to, you know, he's going to end up figuring out how to pitch with diminished stuff, and he'll, you know, maybe it'll look like late career Josh Beckett, but and late career Josh Beckett was, late career Josh Beckett was very usable at times, but he was never really Josh Beckett again. So, you know, it's really just wait and see with Harvey at this point for me. But I'm optimistic enough to slide him into the top 25, and I think given what we've seen out of him before the injury, I think it's fair to still consider the upside to be there. All right, so let's take a little bit of a swifter run through this league. We'll do a little quasi lightning. We'll do a Tino lightning round, and then we'll go to an actual lightning round. Ben, Carlos Rodon and Aaron Sanchez. Who would you rather have this year, and who would you rather have long term?
Sorry, can you say the second name again? It sort of broke it up. Oh, Aaron Sanchez.
Aaron Sanchez.
I would rather have Aaron Sanchez for both.
Okay.
Would you Ben, would you rather have Aaron Sanchez or Chopped Chef Judge Aaron Sanchez?
The ranking would go Aaron Sanchez, Aaron Sanchez, Carlos Rodon, and Carlos Rodon.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Craig, where are your feelings right now on Lucas Giolito?
They're kind of down. I'm a little concerned. I think we've talked about Giolito enough. But the results, and again, you know, it's spring training, small sample, all of that, have not been exceedingly pretty this spring. And I don't know that they need to be, but it certainly would have been nice to see in terms of building confidence, both as someone, you know, watching him and as, you know, for him himself. You know, he just got traded. He had a little bit of a down year. I think, you know, everyone involved would have liked to see him off to a nicer start. So I'm a little concerned. I guess I'd say cautious. I'm cautious with Giolito.
Okay. Ben, let's do another Young American League pitcher versus Young American League pitcher one. Michael Fulmer and Sean Manaea. Same question. 2017 and long term.
I mean, it's funny because I like Manaea, I think, more than most people who aren't you. And like, I'm a little skeptical of Fulmer. Like, I sold high on Fulmer in TDGX. I got Rafael Devers and Nick Williams for him and was really happy with that haul. But I think based on what we saw last year, I mean, I sort of still need to take Fulmer. It's close, but I think you having him this close is more about your insane optimism for Manaea than it is anything Fulmer has really done wrong. I mean, I know this is lightning round, but do you not believe in Fulmer? Obviously, you believe in him to a certain extent because he's 33 here. But, you know, what makes it close for you?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think the beginning of Fulmer's career, honestly, I think it's the best that we see out of him. I think he's a solid but unspectacular SP3. Who can log innings. I think Manaea's got higher upside. I do have Fulmer ranked ahead of Manaea, but yeah, admittedly they are close for me. Craig, Rick Porcello, Danny Duffy, Kevin Gausman, and Marcus Stroman are all ranked in a row here from 38 to 41. Pick one who you think is going to be noticeably higher on this list next year, and pick one who you think is going to be noticeably lower on this list, if either one of those is applicable.
Yeah, well, I think Rick Porcello is going to be lower. I spent a long time writing and then vetting and then publishing an article about Rick Porcello last year, basically saying I can't find anything that's really different about him from kind of years past where he's been bad. It could be the fact that he was doing a bunch of things smaller things in concert that allowed him to be so good. Multiple people I talked to mentioned his command jumping, but I don't know that that's necessarily that we should necessarily see that as a given to kind of carry forward. Since it, you know, he's gone on runs before where he's been really good and it hasn't carried forward in those points. So, I think he's an easy pick for this. I don't think that means he'll be bad. I hope he does, continue to succeed, but, he'd be the guy I'd pick to take a step back. I just wrote my or published my Orioles preview today with the premise that Kevin Gausman is probably the best option the Orioles have to break a streak that that they have not had an ace level performer since Eric Bedard's 2007 season, which I termed as like a 5-win season. That was a 7.5-win season. Eric Bedard was freaking amazing. I think Gausman represents their best chance to be that. He used a curveball more successfully last year. It's kind of sometimes it's a curveball, sometimes it's a slider. As he said in an article, he doesn't put a label on it, but he had a breaking ball he could go to, which was helpful. His splitter his split change is incredible. I think it has one of the best whiff rates on a pitch between splits and changes. I think it's top three. It's a really good pitch, and I think if he can take a step forward with his command, kind of, you know, maybe like Rick Porcello did, and he's an athletic guy who kind of could refine his mechanics and be a little more repeatable and harness that potent fastball and split change, I think he could be that guy. And so I could easily see him, you know, being a little further up the list. That was not a lightning round answer.
That was definitely not a lightning round answer.
I apologize.
No worries. Ben, I will give you 15 seconds to take your temperature on John Gray right now.
I'm a little pissed because I think I jumped off the John Gray bandwagon a half year too early after being the high guy on Gray basically throughout his entire minor league career. Obviously, a very promising real season last year. I do still think you'll want to be somewhat selective about when you use him in cores, but I mean, you can sort of, this is a difficult to say because how can someone be an SP3 if they can only pitch half the time? But when he is not in cores, I'm comfortable viewing him as like an SP3-4 in a TDGX size league, which probably makes him close to an SP5-6 overall, maybe a little better than that.
Okay. Craig, let's talk about a couple of West Coast pitchers who have recently had Tommy John surgery. Matt Moore, Garrett Richards, and Tyler Skaggs are all sort of in the same place on my list. They're all, I would consider them all to be in a similar tier. Is there one member of that group that you believe in more than the close grouping would suggest?
Yeah, I mean, I think Garrett Richards has actually had like real success. I kind of think Matt Moore stinks at this point. I was such a big Matt Moore fan, and at this point, I just think he's not very good. I still really like Tyler Skaggs, but he has not done much at this point. Garrett Richards has actually been legitimately good. He's also, I believe, back and throwing very hard already. So he's easily the answer for me.
Okay. Ben.
Brett.
Do you have any faith in either Jared Eichhoff or Michael Wacha taking any sort of step forward from where they're considered right now in 2017?
That's a boring ass question, Brett. No, because I think you have Wacha, if I had to pick one of the two, just because, you know, advanced stats suggest his ERA shouldn't have been as bad as it was last year. And he's someone who we've seen have success in the recent past. So I guess I'm a little more optimistic on him, but I don't see either of these guys as like, you know, outstanding buy low candidates.
Okay. Should we go to the true lightning round now?
We should, except I'm bummed you didn't ask me about Eduardo Rodriguez, who's right after them, but that's fine.
Please, I have him in a league. So, Ben, just talk about him real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
People don't realize how he was filthy when he came back from the minors last season over, I believe it was 16 starts, like not, you know, not a huge sample size, but a legitimate half season. I mean, he had a 3.25 ERA. He struck out. I think almost a batter per inning. He really limited his walks. I mean, he was a legitimate SP4 if that production held over a full season for the second half of the year. And I don't think he'll be quite that good over a full season, but I think people are looking at the overall stat line because he had a absolutely brutal first six starts coming off of an injury, and I that's really weighing down his overall stat line. But he was really good when he came back, and I would have him legitimately probably 20 spots higher.
And he's looked good this spring, right? Like that's
yes, he's looked very good this. I mean, I prefer him to Matt Moore, yeah. But you have it 58.
Yeah, well, that's because Matt Moore stinks.
Yeah, well, that's partially true. Yes, but like you know, Joe Ross is at 54. That's exactly. I view him in.
Hey, careful.
No, I'm saying I view him and Erod in like a similar like up and coming young pitcher tier in my mind.
Fair enough.
All right. Craig, how many over under on innings for Dylan Bundy this year? 115.
Ooh, I'm going to go over.
All right.
What did he get last year? Like 105, something like that?
I thought he got like 95, but.
I think he got more.
Let's see. Who can get to Baseball Reference first?
Come on, internet.
109.
109.
You were closer than I was. Okay. Right. I should have set the over-under higher than that. Fine, I'm changing it. Oh, 120. Over-under on 120.
I think he goes over.
All right.
I think they're going to push him hard. That's the only answer I got. I think they need him. Like, they don't have other – like, their other options are Wade Miley.
Oh.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah. But Chris Tillman is already hurt, so that's not a good sign.
Yeah, well, that's like sort of his default loadout now. So
yeah, true.
Ben, how many starts combined will Cody Reed and Amir Garrett get this year?
22.
Mm-hmm. Combined 22.
No, that's a bad answer. 34.
Okay. Craig, how over under? On 0.5, how many seasons before he retires is Adam Wainwright a top 50 pitcher?
So over under is half?
Is a half, so yeah.
I don't take the under. The hook is still good, but
I mean, he's a Cardinal though.
Yeah, I know, but between the health and I think there's been. A decline in the stuff. I'm going under.
All right. Ben, same question for you, but with Jordan Zimmermann.
Oh.
Over.
Over?
Yeah, he's younger and he'll dead cat bounce for a season or two.
Okay. Craig, who do you like better in the more recent Tommy John returnee phase? Lance Lynn or Andrew Heaney?
Oh, God. I'll take Heaney. I've never understood how Lance Lynn was actually as good as he was, so I'm going to take Heaney.
Okay. Ben.
Brett.
Where's the guy I was going to ask you about? Here we go. That was a shitty question. I'm going to think of a better question. Over, under on a 4 ERA for Shelby Miller this year.
Oh, fuck you, Brett, which I think lets you know my feelings. I mean, I'll still be the guy who I'm going to draft Shelby Miller last in like every league this season. Actually, I said that. I think I don't have any drafts left. Oh, I have one. I'll probably still take the plunge, but only because I think the upside is there, not because I'm like crazy optimistic.
All right.
I'll say under 5. I think he'll have an ERA under 5.
Okay, that works. Now, one last question for each of you. Name one pitcher between 150 and 175 on this list that I will look dumb for ranking so low at this time next year. Craig.
Oh, good. I'm glad this was me.
I'm glad you're prepared.
Yeah, well, I think, okay. I mean, the easy answer, he's closer to 150 than the bottom of the list, but I think Walker Buehler is getting a lot of attention. He's hit, you know, he's been, what, I think 95 to 99 again this spring after he was coming back from TJ last year. It's all still short stints, so I'm not confident that he's going to hold that, like, throughout games and throughout the season. I'm also not sure he needs to for him to fly up this list. So I also think he's relatively underranked. Like, I would take him over Jorge Ruiz pretty easily. So I think it's a little bit that he's underranked right now, and a lot of it that he's just he's going to be considered a much better prospect by this time next year.
All right, well, I'll steal Craig's other dude and go with Jake Thompson. I'm not entirely sure he puts it together, but if he starts to, I think you could rank him similarly to where you ranked Fulte this year, which is 93. So I think it's within the realm of possibility that he has a pretty solid jump up the list.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Anyone else either you guys want to comment on before we
Yeah, I'm gonna throw one at you. Over under 3.50 ERA for Francisco Liriano this year.
Over.
But okay. Close. But yeah, I was waiting for a but. I mean, he has been unreal this spring and not walking the house either.
He has been, and I've he been was out on really Liriano good like with the Blue Jays last times. Year.
I know he was. That's why I'm like tempted to get back in on him.
Oh, my sweet summer children.
I am so back in on Lear. I think I have
you've drafted never been out on
every draft so far.
I remain out on Liriano.
I know. I can't decide. I feel like I go in and then I get burned and then I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I just because I couldn't find a Xander Bogaerts Netherlands jersey anywhere, I bought an Andrew McCutchen America jersey.
Oh, that could go poorly.
Yeah, that could go poorly.
I prefer to remember the good times.
But you know what, Ben? It can't work out worse than an Enya jersey.
An Enya Ireland jersey.
I mean, it is true that both Kutch and America are on the decline, but I'm choosing to remember the good times. Yeah,
that's okay. They'll both be gone by 2020. Oh. Sorry. I love Andrew McCutchen. That was unnecessary.
Oh, they both are sliding further to the right. Episode 84 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you are using to listen to us. Now that we are back and have been honestly very consistent about recording every other week, I think we deserve another review or two, so please do what you can for us there.
I'd like to thank someone did very recently, so thank you to the person who did that.
Oh, I haven't checked in a few weeks, but yes, thank you. Thank you, person. Your reward is this very personal shout out. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. Find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in
consistently distracted.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
was looking up Orioles shit, and I had Rob McEwen send me some stats stuff, and I saw the name David DeLucci.
Oh! Holy right? shit. Yeah, dude.
Rangers, wow. right? What?
I literally, like, I forget. Like, he was decent.
Yeah, for, like, a long time.
For a long time, and I just completely
Oh, fuck, dude. Existed. That's a great one.
Isn't it? And I also forgot he was on the Orioles.
Well, he was a Ranger most of the time, right?
I think Rangers, was he on the Rockies maybe for a little bit?
Blue Jays maybe?
Yankees, like he was on everyone.